Tonight we want to look at a paragraph in Hebrews chapter 12, as it again has to do with finishing the course of the Christian life, but it is centered in a statement that is made in verse 4. As the paragraph begins, when it says, "Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin." In the first century, there was going to come a time, particularly after Jerusalem was destroyed, that the Roman Empire was going to figure out that once you got rid of Judaism, you didn't get rid of the church. While there were Jews in the church was not made up primarily of Jews. Made up Jew and Gentiles. As a matter of fact, there are going to be a lot of Gentiles in the church. So when you deal with one problem, as they thought, the point was they thought they'd nip that in the bud, but the church was going to grow, the church was going to thrive. When Jesus said the gates of Hades will not prevail against it, number one, I believe that had to do with his own death, that the resurrection of Christ was a guarantee, and therefore the church would be built after his resurrection. But there's also a picture in the book of Acts, and really as you go through the epistles, that the church is going to thrive in the heat of controversy. Whatever it is you throw at us, it doesn't matter. Whether we prosper, we're going to be faithful. Whether we suffer, we're going to be faithful. We are going to strive against any difficulty that sin throws at us. Well, he says here to these that are, they're sort of struggling. These Hebrews are being challenged to go back into Judaism, which would be a huge mistake in view of the fact that there's not going to be any temple or high priest records, or priesthood records for that matter, or anything associated with the temple when it's actually destroyed, and was in AD 70. But the picture here is some were leaning in that direction to give up Christ and to go back into Judaism. And they weren't having all that difficult a time at the time. But the day was coming when they would have to resist unto blood. So when it says in Revelation 2 and verse 10, "Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life." What does it mean, be faithful unto death? In that context, it's not just referring to be faithful until you die. That's often how we quote it or use it, and that principle is true. It literally meant be faithful if it meant your death, and I will give you the crown of life. For some did die and not give up their faith. So while they're striving against evil that would do you harm for standing up for what's right, the Hebrew writer here, I believe to be Paul, is basically saying, if you're giving up now, if you're throwing in the towel now, you've not yet even gotten to the point of where you've got to resist against the shedding of your own blood in your striving, in your work, in this race, this agony, as it were, in this race until you get to the finish line, to cross that finish line. By the way, did Abel suffer because he lived by faith? Did Noah face any kind of ridicule in the building of the ark because he lived by faith? How about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, even Joseph? Did Joseph suffer, even from his own brothers, striving against sin in order to keep on walking in faith? How about Moses, the sacrifices of Moses? How about Joshua with his own nation and all on top of all the battles that they had to fight? And then you go to the verses we looked at, like Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, all the prophets, did they all strive against sin to hold on to their faith? And then looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. And so the concept is there anything out here that I've got to put up with, or even to suffer my own life's end in this striving of this thing called the Christian life, that I will hold on to my faith all the way to the end? Back in the Old Testament, there were all kinds of examples of people who struggled when they were trying to do what's right and suffering at the same time. You remember Job, right? And Job's three friends basically said, nobody is this righteous and suffers this much. And Job says, If I were in your shoes, I wouldn't be speaking the way you're speaking to me. You know, miserable comforters are you all. And Job's trying to, in his own mind, come to grips with, why is it that all of this is happening to me? By the way, God called him a perfect and an upright man. So he's striving against sin. He thinks he's going to die, and yet, is he going to lose his faith? Here's what he says. Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. That doesn't sound like a man weak in faith. That's a man strong in faith. And by the way, it is through the trying of your faith that works patience. And you have heard of the patience of Job. Book of James teaches both those concepts, chapter 1, chapter 5. Okay? So when we're looking at these passages, we're looking now at the whole paragraph here has to do with divine correction. So now we get down to what's called corporal punishment or discipline. Sometimes we are suffering because we did something wrong. Can we all agree with that? I did what's wrong and now I'm being punished for it. But sometimes, even when I'm doing what's right, I still suffer. By the way, that basically is the concept that you find in Job's life. Was Job doing anything wrong by which to be suffering? No, not in the sense of, you know, measure of life to measure of the equality of the suffering. Now, Job's friends thought he did. But Job was told by God, or God actually said to Satan, he is a perfect and an upright man, one that fears God and shuns evil. So what do you do when you look at the nature of the Christian life? I'm running the race. I'm trying to reach the finish line. I will hold on to my faith. But why is all this happening to me? By the way, and that's sort of human to even think those ways. Notice the concept now as you begin in verse 5. He now cites Proverbs 3, verses 11 and 12. By the way, the Hebrews should know the Hebrew Bible, right? The Old Testament in particular. And Proverbs is the book of wisdom. It has to do in the section in the Old Testament of the books of poetry, but really in here, the books of wisdom. Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, so forth. So it says, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. Okay, now let's wait right there before we go a little further. You have forgotten the exhortation, we would say the passage in the Old Testament, that talks about you as children. By the way, he's not talking about wicked children. He's talking about just children. Children who have a father. Children who have a father that loves them. And because you have a father that loves you, there's a certain way this father operates towards you because you're children. Okay? Now, I don't know who the oldest Christian is in this room. I'm not even going to venture to guess there. But regardless of how old any of us may become, are we still children as far as the relationship to God as Father? Absolutely. It doesn't matter how old you are. If you live to be 969, almost 970. By the way, that would break a record, right? Methuselah was still a child of God as you go down through that line. He was in the line of Seth. By the way, that's in the line of Noah, of those that called on the name of the Lord. You have forgotten. Is it easy sometimes in a struggle in doing the right thing and what we have to deal with out here in life to discipline us, to make us humble, to keep us focused? Is it easy sometimes to forget passages in the Bible that really say, well, if you just think about this, you wouldn't be as all what we call tense, worried, whatever the case might be. So he's citing this Old Testament passage. God's not calling you rebellious people. God's calling you children. Okay? Now, in order to really appreciate, let's look at the passage here. It says, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. Why? Why not just throw in the towel and say, I quit, I give up? Why? For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. Now, those who are adults
who may, whether married or not married, or you've seen children disciplined, you know, here's immaturity, trying to develop into maturity, and sometimes that's a tough job. It's called tough love. Well, this is tough love, isn't it? This isn't a permissive parent. Now, honey, don't do that. You know, well, sometimes you may say that, but honey, don't do that without any reinforcement. Those words don't have any meaning. Okay? So now let's go back to Proverbs. Put your ribbon in your Bible or your bookmark, whatever, here back in Hebrews 12. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 3. The Holy Spirit never cites an Old Testament passage in the New Testament out of context. And that's a study, by the way, in and of itself. It's important to go back into the Old Testament and read the context in which a passage is pulled out. The Holy Spirit didn't just pull a verse out of thin air and say, well, I think that was a good one to use. Sometimes preachers may do that. The Holy Spirit never did that. There is in chapters 2 and 3 of Proverbs, and I'm not going to go to chapter 2. You can do that on your own. We're going to look at the first part of chapter 3. Note the context here. This is Solomon as a father talking to his son, giving him instructions how to act as a child. Now, the Hebrew writer refers to the Father here as God the Father of lights. He'll mention in Hebrews chapter 12, this Father of lights that chastens us, as our physical fathers chasten us, our Father of lights chastens us that we be unto holiness. Well, the parallel here is, as an earthly father, okay, head of the house, father over a child, as an earthly father is trying to train, chasten, whatever it takes to bring this immaturity, inexperience to maturity and experience, and therefore to bring it to the level by which, all right, now you're a grown up, as it were, you're an adult enough now to be able to take it from here and self-discipline yourself. By the way, that's the purpose of discipline anyway, is ultimately to train to self-discipline. Right? Because parents aren't going to be around forever. Okay? Notice, verse 1. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. So here's a dad talking to his son. Here's a father talking to his son. How many parents have ever had to remind their children what they've taught them before? I remember a preacher one time is talking to his daughter, and she was going out on a date. He said from a pulpit one time at a gospel meeting, he says, there's always one sentence I always tell her when she walks out the door to get in the car to go with her date. And here's what I always told her. Remember who you are. Every time she walked out the door, the last words out of his mouth, remember who you are. Okay. He said, I did not mean by that, remember that you are your mother and my child. He says, remember you are God's child. That's what he meant. And he didn't have to say that every time. He just said, remember who you are. Is that simple? Yeah, that's simple. Actually, is that effective? Yes, that can be very effective. You know, the last thing you hear from your parents' mouth is, I'm going out on my own, so to speak, is remember who you are. My son, forget not. Forget not what? Forget not my law. Law there has to do with rule of conduct, rule of action. There are certain do's in this house and there are certain don'ts in this house. There are certain things that, you know, if you abide by them, you're going to be encouraged. There are certain things, if you break them, well, you're going to be discouraged. It may be mild at the beginning. It could get severe later on. But don't forget what you've been taught. Number two, let your heart keep my commandments. What about your eyes, your ears, and everything else? How about let your heart keep? By the way, if your heart keeps it, what's going to happen with your eyes and your ears and your hands and everything else? How many of you have ever heard the old children's song, Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. There's a father up above, looking down in tender love. Oh, be careful, little eyes. And then it goes hands, feet, mouth, you know. How about be careful, little heart, what you let in. keep thy heart with all diligence, out of it are the issues of life. Guess what book of the Bible that verse is found in? This book right here we're studying out of right now. Proverbs 4:23 is the verse. Okay, look at verse 2. Why would I need to not forget my father's law and keep them, obey them in my heart, his commandments? Why? For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. In other words, I'm not talking just to be talking. There's a practical reason why you need to be listening to what I'm teaching you and not forget it and to apply it. Because if you want to live a long life, these are concepts that have to do with a long life. By the way, we understand accidents and diseases. We're talking about cause and effect. Is it not true that if a person does risky, sinful behavior, he could end up with a short life? Absolutely. The Bible's filled with examples of that. Is there a cause and effect that if I do the right thing, there's a tendency in which it will go well with me? How about children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with promise. What do you mean with promise? That it may be well with thee. That's the promise. And that thou mayest live long on the earth. By the way, that's not in the Old Testament. That's in the New. That's Ephesians 6 verses 1, 2, and 3. So there's a promise that goes with children obeying their parents. Well, I've got my rights. Yeah, you have your rights. You have the right to do wrong, but that doesn't mean there's consequences. Not consequences with choices. Now, how many of us don't want verse 2 of this chapter? All of us do. Length of days, right? Long life, peace. It says these are the principles that come with, these are the effects that come with adding the cause. And the cause is, don't forget what I've taught you. Look at verse 3. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the, what? Table of thine heart. Well, I've got it in a book here called the Bible. No, it's important to have a Bible, but you need this in the heart. Why? Thy word have I hid in my heart. Why? Why would I do that? So that I can say I've memorized verses. No. That I might not sin against thee. See, we're talking about striving against sin here. Psalm 119, verse 11. So, take these things, the mercy of God and the truth of God, not one or the other, take both, the mercy and truth, bind it upon thy neck. It's as though you're putting on something as an ornament. You know, sometimes people like to wear certain things because, and that becomes their personality. For example, a flower in the hair. Now, does anybody in here know who I'm talking about? Flower in the hair. Nobody knows, has a clue, right? Is that just a signature of this person? Okay, bread at the door. Is that a dead giveaway? For those of you that don't know, that's pretty much hand in glove right there. Right? Here's what a Christian looks like. Here's what a faithful child of God looked like. It was as though the Bible was their ornament. You bind these things, as it were, about your neck. Why? Because this is what a Christian looks like. This is what a faithful Israelite looked like. As though you took these Bible verses and you just adorned them. Adorn the doctrine of Christ. By the way, that's Titus chapter 2. Teaches that. Adorning the doctrine of the Lord. In other words, you're putting on this material. Not in a literal way, but in a spiritual way. Note the next line. Verse 4. Another good motivator. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God. That's not all that verse says. God and man. So you want favor and good understanding? How many of us want to understand what life's about? All right, well, here's how you understand. Here's how you have good understanding. I've actually had members of the church tell me, I don't understand how a person could think or act a certain way. I said, the reason you don't understand it is because you don't, that's not your background. As a matter of fact, that's not how your ethical makeup is made up. You think like a Christian, they're not thinking like a Christian. And you know a Christian doesn't act that way because a Christian doesn't think that way. So you have good understanding. As a matter of fact, as long as you keep on following that, you know you're going to have favor with God. And by the way, there's some people out here that don't like you because you're doing the right thing. They didn't like Noah because he did the right thing. He condemned the world, right, by his actions, by his faith. But the fact is, what men are you trying to please? Well, you're trying to please everybody. I'm not going to please everybody. But are there people out here who are going to respect you, though they may not agree with you? Well, absolutely. But that's a big word too, isn't it? Respect. How far can you and I go in life if we thought nobody respected us? I don't respect your opinion. I don't respect anything about you. Well, that's in that word favor there. So shall you find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and men. Favor. It carries with the idea of respect. They might not like you. They'll respect you. Note the next line. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not unto thine understanding. And all thy ways acknowledge him, and he will direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. By the way, is he teaching this son over? Has this already been taught? Read chapter 2. This same material has been taught before. Why do parents repeat the same things over and over and over and over to their children? Because we don't always get it the first or the second or the third or the fourth or the fifth or the sixth or the seventh time. But maybe by the 101th time, all of a sudden it clicked. How many of you remember as your parents were bringing you up? I'm talking now a lot of older ones. How many of you remember all of a sudden something happening and all of a sudden your parents' voice comes in your head? Or something that your upbringing taught you that all of a sudden, that just don't seem like I need to be doing that or even thinking that. Why is that? Why does your conscience tell you that? Because your conscience has been trained. Your conscience has been trained. Did you know consciences can be trained to do good? And therefore it becomes a deterrent to do evil? By the way, you know your conscience can be trained to do evil. And thus doing good is considered evil. So what is parenting in a nutshell? It's training this inner conscience to discern both good and evil, to know what's good and to know what's evil, not by mom and dad's standards, by God's standards. And therefore, follow that. Follow that. Train your conscience in a good way. Okay? Note the next line. What shall this, if you be not wise in your own eyes, fear the Lord and depart from evil? What good does that do? It shall be health, this is a funny word here, to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. Now, those are Old Testament figures of speech that have to do with your physical health. Did you know the Bible actually has verses in it that, if applied, actually helps your physical health? Literally. You want to have a healthy physical life? Apply what the Bible has to say. Avoid certain things that will destroy your body. Well, what might that be? What might that be? How about alcohol? Can social drinking lead to disease? How about the use of drugs that you find here condemned in Scripture under the craft of witches? The word is witchcraft, but it meant what witches crafted up, which basically was drugs. It's from the word pharmacia. Surely we don't have anybody in alcohol and drug rehabilitation, right, in our society? You know, are you thankful that you never went down that road? You never, I knew the Bible taught that. I knew my parents didn't practice that. I knew my peers, my friends, we didn't go to, and I am absolutely thankful I never went down that road. And by the way, did it give you quality of life and a long life? Will it add quality of life and a long life? Sure it will. Sure it will. Health to your navel, strength to your bones. It's talking about your physical body here. How about this one? A merry heart does good like a medicine. Guess what book of the Bible that's in too? That's in Proverbs. Do you know a pessimistic attitude of life actually can make you physically sick? Do you know worry can kill you? How about not knowing how to handle stress? Does stress elevate blood pressure? That can give you headaches? Can it cause you to feel fatigued? Can it decrease your immune system? Absolutely, all of the above. Do you know what peace and joy and happiness in the Lord can provide physically? I'm not talking about spiritually, that goes without saying. Physically? So what is this father trying to teach his son? I'm trying to teach you, these are not verses just to memorize, these are verses to live by. You want favor with God and men and good understanding? You want a healthy life? There are some do's and there are some don'ts. Learn the don'ts and abhor it. Learn the do's and cleave to it. And there are consequences that go with that. All right, now I'm going to skip these other verses and get down to verses 11, 12, which is right out of the quotation from Hebrews 12. Because what he's doing here is he's giving a generalized list of things that has to do with proper understanding of why your mom and daddy act towards you the way they do. All right, now let's pause at this moment because we're going to move a little quicker as we go to the next 2 points in this lesson. How many of us who are adults who are growing up, even in a Christian home or even a non-Christian home, probably in a non-Christian home would be a little bit more difficult to think because Christian home obviously is a different setup. How many of us remember as immature, inexperienced children that our parents didn't know what they were doing? Later on in life, as we matured, we realized they did know what they were doing. I didn't get it then, but I get it now. I understand now. How many of us as adults can just flash back? There was a situation in my time in life in which this happened and my daddy did this and I just didn't get it. But now looking back on that, I understand now why that happened. And he wasn't reacting, he was acting. I'm not talking about acting like Hollywood acting. I mean, he did the right thing. I didn't think it was the right thing, but it was the right thing to do. And Mama did that one time. I said something, and then she said, "You ought not say that," and I said it again. Now, if you say that again, and I just said it again just to be saying it. So what? By the way, is that maturity or immaturity? And now I understand why I picked myself up off the floor. And I get that now. So now you come to 11 and 12. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord. Despise there carries with the idea, don't take that lightly. Do not consider it a thing to be looked down on. Also, do not be weary of his correction. I remember a basketball coach of mine making us do things I thought he's trying to kill us. 2, 3, sometimes 3.5 hours after school. You know, I got homework to do. I've still got things to do. I got to eat supper, take a bath, homework to do before I go to bed, and do this all over the next day. Why are we doing this for 3.5 hours? Practice full court for about 2 hours, and then he says, okay, now get down here on the end of this line, and we're going to run what they called them in Alabama, suicide. In Georgia, they called them blood and guts. Had a totally different word for it. By the way, if you've never run one, you don't know what I'm talking about. You stand on the end line, and you have 30 seconds, every one of you, everybody on the entire team, whether you start or don't start. And you run to the baseline of the other end of the floor, and then you come back and you touch the end line. Then you run to the free throw line down here, and then you come back to the end line. Then you go to half court, then you go back and touch the baseline. Then you go to the immediate free throw line, and you come out, and everybody is to be back in 30 seconds. Everybody. Trust me, you can't jog and do that. And you're going to run three of them regardless. And by the way, if you don't get back, you run another one because one person didn't get back. Now, you might have got back, but your buddy didn't get back. By the way, you're going to run another one. And you're going to run three as a team, everybody, and everybody is going to run that at least three times. You may run 15 tonight. I don't care. By the way, that is Joe Jones of Decatur, Alabama, actually Austin High School. Named the gymnasium after him down there. I never understood. You've already run our tongues into the ground. Why are you running our bones into the ground? Listen, basketball games were short compared to practice. And by the way, you didn't run blood and guts or suicides in games. You just played the games. And by the way, there was halftime and you got a break. Basketball games were fun. What is the whole point of that? I never understood that. Here's the point of several points. Number one, you want to win games in the fourth period of a basketball game? Get in the best physical condition you possibly can get in. Because that's when most games, when even teams, when they're about equal in their talent ability, that's when most of those games are won. It's when somebody has got more in the tank than the other one does. And you don't do that sitting over here watching people do things. You get out there and you run yourself. You got to be in great physical shape to be an athlete. That's a fact. And by the way, there's some do's and don'ts that you don't put in this body. That's a fact. So number one, it had to do with the fact of getting physical condition. A second lesson learned from that, and by the way, I know this isn't in the Bible, but it has to do with discipline. A second lesson is there is a way of teaching yourself you can take one more step more than you think you can. How many mamas in this room have taken one more hour in pushing through something when they thought they couldn't take another hour of that? How many dads? I'll take one more hour in the job, whatever it takes, to push through this in order to get this job completed. How many of you have ever seen people just, I quit. I quit. No, you can't quit. You're raising a child here. You can't quit. This is a life here. You can't quit. Well, I'm tired. Well, I know you're tired. I'm frustrated. Yeah, I get that too. This is your child here. This is what God gave you. By the way, and you're his child. And you don't think he ever, ever, ever gets frustrated with his children. So what happens when life gets tough when you're trying to do the right thing? You keep on pushing. Why? Because your reward's worth it. It's worth every bit of it. Why? For whom the Lord loves, he corrects. Even as a father, the son in whom he delights. So now let's go to these next two points in Hebrews 12, because he's feeding now off of this context. He says, consider this now. Consider this discipline that God gives his own children. Whom the Lord loves, he chastens, scourges every son whom he has received. Verse 6. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is he that the father chastens not? The answer is, there's no father that doesn't chasten his son if he doesn't love him. But if you be without chastisement, by the way, that's what we all want. I want all the benefits of a good life trained properly without any consequences. Well, it don't come that way. By the way, military, boot camp. There is no real good reason for boot camp except for the drill sergeant to make your life miserable. That's the whole purpose of boot camp. Isn't that right? To give him something to do to scream at. Those of you that have been through boot camp, is there a real good reason for having boot camp? If you're in a military, active military conflict, is there a reason for boot camp? When a person first starts day one at boot camp, does he understand boot camp? And there may be a lot of things he don't understand. When he gets through with it, is there anything he learns from boot camp? What about the Christian life? Is this not, did we not have as a Christian a little bit of boot camp? And all of a sudden we got to press through, we got to push on, we got to go further than we think we can ever do? Well, you're right back in Hebrews 12. This is how parenting works. This is how the military works. By the way, that doesn't mean parenting is military style. Don't mean to impress that. But the point here is what? This is how Father operates. By the way, this is how the God in heaven operates. This is how godly fathers operate. Look at verse 8. But if you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers. By the way, God does all the same way here. Okay, then are you bastards and not sons. Bastard is illegitimate. In the Roman Empire, there were a lot of children that were brought into the world that basically were thrown to the streets. I saw this in Thailand one time. When we were in Udorn, or going to Udorn, we went to the orphanage at Korat. And if I were ever going to adopt a little girl, there was a little girl over there one day who got a hold of my britches leg in that orphanage, and she would not let go. She had the darkest brown eyes of any little girl I'd ever seen, dark hair, sort of sandy complected. I can still see this little girl's face right now. Okay, and every time I look down, she's looking up at me, and I'm like, you need to stop that. You really need to stop that. Okay, and I'm trying to pull her away, and she won't let go. What I learned about these people, particularly this age group, was the caretaker there at the orphanage said one day they opened up the front door of the orphanage and there was a basket with a small child in the basket, like Moses in the basket. And it had a note on it. It says, I cannot take care of this child. This child is now yours. It has no name. You give it a name. The parent, the mother, literally abandoned her own child and put it in a basket at the door, the front door of the orphanage. And they took the child in. No name, no return address. Here's a life at your doorstep. And that orphanage there at Korat has just 30, 40 kids like that. By the way, of all ages now. You know, periodically you'll find one like that. So sometimes, you know, we can't house them, and so we have to go call the state agency. But generally they know we're available. They know we're a nonprofit organization. It is an orphanage of the church. And this is what, they just drop the kids off here and leave them. They're yours until they mature out. Oh, well, how would you like learning that's what your biological parent thought of you? Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which have corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be subject unto the Father of spirits and live? Consider this. Not everybody had a Christian daddy growing up, right? Maybe even in this room. Do you know that there are children that still want the affection and the love of their parents, even if their parents abuse them? I was told not too many years ago that there were children who actually would claw, bite, kick, do whatever to you if you took them away from their biological parents and put them in a foster home, even when the parents were abusing them as kids. They would fight you as you take them to put them in foster care. Does that make sense to you? That a child's being abused by its own parents would now treat the people taking them away from their biological parents as enemies, and yet we're trying to get your parents' help, and we're trying to help you at the same time, and they don't see that? You reverence those that would even abuse you? How much more one who would never abuse you? Then verse 10, for they verily for a few days chasten us after their own pleasure. What he's saying here is the weakness of parents. By the way, young folks, you already know this. But your parents are not perfect people, and sometimes they're going to make mistakes, even in corrections. Give them the benefit of the doubt. They have been 10 years old before, and they know what a 10-year-old looks like and acts like. They have been 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. They know all those years that you're living through. And not yet. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Yes, they're going to make mistakes, but the fact of the matter is, they're trying. They're trying. But your Father in heaven's not going to make any mistakes like that. And if you reverence these parents down here that make mistakes, what in the world should you consider of your Heavenly Father that knows what He's doing? And He knows 100% of the time what He's doing. So now we come to the last point in this lesson. He for our profit, that we might be partakers of His holiness. So here, comply with the benefits, though it's not easy compliance. No chastening for the present seems to be joyous. Amen to that. How many of you enjoyed getting a whipping? You really enjoyed it. You understand, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous. When a parent turns to that child, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. My daddy said that to me one time. I said, I don't believe a word of that. You are not going to hurt at all like I am about to hurt. Now, as a parent, it's a different kind of hurt, isn't it? You're not talking about physical pain. It's talking about, I really don't want to do this. I want you to get it without me having to put you through it and me through it too. But sometimes the Board of Education has to go to the seat of understanding. But grievous, right? Nevertheless, here's the light at the end of this dark tunnel. Afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. You'll do the right thing next time, won't you? Won't you? Hannah the other day was talking about some of the sit-tos that she and I had back in the bedroom. By the way, did Daniel and Benjamin the same way. When I disciplined our children, I applied Proverbs 29:15. That was my go-to verse in parenting. Proverbs 29, verse 15. The rod and reproof give instruction. A child left to himself brings his mother to shame. The rod and reproof give instruction. A child left to himself brings his mother to shame. You let your child raise itself, you're going to rue the day that child was ever born into your house. God gave you a job to do. It didn't just say the rod. It didn't just say the tongue lashing. It said both. Give wisdom. Give instruction. So my practice was, before my children ever got a spanking, which by the way was a whipping, I took them to the back bedroom of the house and I shut the door and I made them sit down on the bed and I gave their undivided attention, personal sermon as to why we're about to do what we're about to do and why. Hannah said something the other day about, I wished he'd just done it and got it over with. The speeches were worse than the whippings. I thought, glad you understand that. Because now you got a 1-year-old going on 2 who may think he's 22 that you're fixing to have to deal with. By the way, she gets it now in a lot of ways. By the way, Daniel does too, and Benjamin does too in a lot of ways now. I didn't understand it as a kid. I get it now as a parent. Is there any lesson that you and I could ever imagine why God didn't just let us have kids full grown from birth? when Benjamin was born and some of the things we were having to deal with him, I said, I now understand why God gave parents children in children form. It was not to teach the children anything. They were going to have to be taught anyway. It was to teach the parents something. Number one, this is how I am with you, and therefore this is how you are to be with this child. And later on, they'll grow up to learn what you're now learning, but right now they don't get it. That's what your job's about. No chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them that are what? Exercise thereby. And by the way, my daddy got lots of exercise. How about yours? Did it take? Personalities of children are quite different, right? One thing I learned about having three children is each one of them received instruction in a different way. Would you say that's true? One child, all you do is speak to this child, child just shudder. The next one you speak to, huh, what? You speak again. Did you say something? You speak a third time. And by the way, those weren't with words out of the mouth then. This one is the child you have to get his attention. His, by the way. His attention, by the way. He understands now. He's got a 2-year-old who thinks he's 22. And then there's Hannah, who's a mix between the two. And boys and girls. By the way, raising boys and girls, the philosophy of that in our society and in our culture, it's challenging, isn't it, as a parent? Guess what? God raises every child in every culture on this planet all the way down through every generation. What kind of job do you think God's got? Sometimes we hope we actually get out of the parenting job business, don't we? I've raised my kids, they're on their own. Guess what? You never get out of the parenting job. You just become grandparents, maybe. You never get out of the parenting job because God the Father never gets out of the parenting job. Is that correct? I don't care how old you are, how young you are. God is always a father. Do not forget the exhortation. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. God's trying to teach us something. In every situation in life, God's trying to teach us something. The question is whether we are wise enough to look for the answer or throw up our hands and quit. No, can't do that. This is eternity we're talking about. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience. How? By the things which he suffered. Did you ever learn obedience by the things which you suffered? And being made perfect, being made complete, he became the author of eternal salvation. To whom? To all them that obey him. That's in the book of Hebrews as well. Hebrews 5, verses 8 and 9. If you're subject tonight to striving against sin, I know what sin is. I've lived that kind of life. I now want to strive unto righteousness. And I understand that God my Father is the Father of lights, by which he's trying to train in me to perfect unto holiness and the fruit of righteousness. He wants me to do what's right because he knows the product that comes from doing right. Long life, good life, healthy, peaceable life. He understands. Life now, life to come. And then what Jesus said, John 10:10, I am come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. And we all want that. But what does it come? It comes through obedience. And obedience doesn't come easy. You learn obedience by the things which you suffer. You may have to suffer to obey the gospel. Believing that Christ is the Son of God, turning from sin, that's a suffering. Confessing your faith, being baptized into Christ, you may, after being baptized, have to suffer from your own family. your friends, your neighbors, your co-workers, whatever, any kind of persecution. But listen, blessed are they that are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5, verse 10. Are you here tonight and you need to come back to your first love? Again, it's tough. Life, the Christian life is straight and narrow. It's not broad and wide. It's straight and narrow. It's not going to be any different. And our Father will see us through. While Floyd leads us in the invitation song, if you're subject, won't you come? So stand and sing.